Hi, I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori. We've always thought that the most compelling story strikes the perfect balance between an honest look at the mess of life and the humor that can be found in the mess. To be perfectly honest, we don't really know how to live life without both the humor and the authenticity.
Our podcast might be a little bit of whiplash at times. We can spin from hard and deep to humor and laughing on a dime. The hard will be really hard, and the truths we share are the ugliest of humanity. We don't intend to make it seem like it's all fine or to pretty up the pain, but we also know that the joy we found is all the more profound because of the pain.
So we hope you can stick with us through the ugly, because there will also be joy and hope and humor. Welcome to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. Hello, and welcome back to The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. Lori and Kate, we're both here.
You already know us, so that's good. Mm-hmm.
So our subject today is about trauma and physical consequences because, yeah, Kate did a thing this week.
Yeah. to be honest, like even recording this episode today, there's not a lot of space in the moment for me to do this, but here we are doing it because we feel like it's important. But earlier this week, my family and I went on a skiing, a little skiing getaway at Holiday Valley. Friends of ours had rented a condo and we went up to spend a couple days with them. And skiing is kind of one of our things that we do together as a family, you know, and it's sort of like a happy point. It's a happy place for me. It's definitely, it feels like it's a happy place.
I feel like a regular person.
I feel like a regular person, and I feel like I'm accomplishing something every time I do something new, and I feel connected to myself and connected to my kids, and just it's a really good thing for me, just mentally and emotionally, and it's just so great to do with my family. But
and you're looking forward to, like, we've been doing this hard thing.
Yep, we've been doing a lot of episodes and there had been just like a lot going on, and it was like, okay, this is like the weekend where like skiing's my favorite and we're going to get away and we're going to get to do that. And we had an awesome day Sunday, amazing conditions, really awesome Monday morning. We, you know, my oldest son skied his first Black Diamond. He was so excited about that. We all skied, you know, some things that we had pushed ourselves to do, and we were feeling a little confident and, we went down a run that we always go down a lot. It's a terrain park, but you can ski around the features, which is what we typically do. And I don't know, I was feeling confident and I did go up on top of one of the features and kind of over it, stuck the landing. Although my husband keeps telling me it wasn't a landing if he didn't get air, but it was, it was absolutely a landing. And I was celebrating. I was yelling to my husband, like, did you friggin' see that? Because that was amazing. Like, I'm amazing. And in my celebration, caught a weird edge. My skis did not release. They should have, and they did not. And I tore my MCL. Had to have ski patrol come and take me off the mountain. Every time I see ski patrol, I'm like, that's so embarrassing for these people. And then, like, here I am in this stupid sled. So
scared and hurt
and crying because I already know I'm not gonna I was like, I'm not gonna ski the rest of the day. I was not at all thinking like for the rest of the season, but that is what it is gonna be. The ortho told me, no, you're out for the season, even though I begged. So yeah, it's been a really tough week. Still kind of waiting on results to see what is next for that, but it's been a really tough week, and it kind of had triggered like a lot of stuff, because the reality is that I think anyone listening to this, you know, would be able to imagine that there's a lot, you know, you can't go through that type of physical trauma and not have some lasting effects from it. And this whole experience just really highlighted that. It just made it, you know, like, I don't know. I feel like let's just dive into this. Like, mm-hmm. I have a hard time using crutches because my shoulders hurt from past trauma, from being tied up in weird ways and, you know,
I know.
So it's just things like that that are like, that are residual that I don't really talk about, and there's a lot that I won't talk about because there's a line there, but that I think people need to be aware of, both just, I don't know. Sorry, I'm struggling today.
So while Kate thinks about kind of where to go from here, but let me just say that it's a good reminder for us. We say it, but you know, we're walking around people all the time and we have no idea what they're going through. And if you met Kate on a normal day, I mean, if you've listened to the other podcasts, you've heard public Kate many, many times. So you understand that if you met Kate out in the world, you would not think, oh, wow, you know, she would have a hard time using crutches because her shoulders hurt, or that she feels the weight of this. You wouldn't think that, but yet here it is. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking, Kate, when you were talking is, this is also one of those black cloud things you were talking about.
Yeah. Yep. It's been a lot of catastrophe lately. and it's hard to not associate that with just kind of what we're trying to do here, right? The whole black cloud of like, we're trying to push through this and do this, but man, it's been a long couple weeks. So yeah, but I also think, you know, you had said the weight of this, and I think that that's important to talk about too, like the emotional aspect of the physical part of it. You know, they go together. And so, I don't know, you can talk about that.
Okay, I will talk about that. So, you know, when we go back to implicit and explicit memory, remembering that implicit memory is the stuff that is more like the puzzle pieces under the couch that are there, and you know, maybe we're sort of aware that they're there, but our connection to them is really more of a sensory connection. And that's what post-traumatic stress responses really are all about. They're all about sort of when something is not yet processed, a memory, a puzzle piece is not on the table and put into the puzzle. It's there and it gets set off by a sensory experience that is consistent or resonant with the past experience. And so sometimes it's things like a certain smell or the lyrics to a song, or you know, the example I used in the trauma and memory episode was about the flowers in the wallpaper. It's some sensory experience now triggers the whole cascade of the original experience. And so physical pain that is consistent with past experiences for Kate isn't just, anybody who's been injured like this, like with a knee or whatever, understands everything is hard now, right? You're not just in pain, but you can't walk right. You can't do all the things that you normally do. You certainly can't do the things as fast as you could do. Your patience is frayed because you're hurting and you're frustrated, but it's more than that. Mm-hmm. It's all the memories that go with that.
Yeah, it's all the memories that go with that, because this is certainly not the first time in my life that I've had to accommodate an injury. And so there's so many different layers to that. There's the layer of feeling guilty for that, because if I had an injury growing up, it was my fault, right? Like even though it was done to me, it was still looked at as my fault that I got injured or that I wasn't really, you know, sucking it up well. And so I feel guilty still, like even now I'm trying to tell myself that this was an accident, and some people are trying to tell me it was an accident.
It is an accident.
I landed it though. So, mm-hmm. But
that was never allowed.
It was definitely like everyone's just mad and frustrated because now they have to deal with me being injured. And so there is still that kind of residual feeling of like, I'm sorry I ruined our ski weekend. I'm sorry that I can't ski with the family now. I'm sorry that people have to kind of accommodate me, and I'm sorry at work, and I'm sorry at home, and I'm just sorry, you know, I'm sorry, because that's that kind of old feeling.
Which is completely, of course, back then it made no sense. These things were done to you. You were injured because someone did something to you, but you were over and over and over made to feel like this was your fault.
Yeah.
And now you have messed everything up for everybody.
Yeah. It's also that feeling of that old feeling of like, this is who I am. I'm just always a problem. I'm always
a burden,
injured. Yeah. And like that I'm klutzy and that I'm, you know, and but when I look back dramatic. At that now, yeah, it's like I always had something. There was always something that was wrong. And I think people saw it that way. Like these same adults that we keep talking about that missed it, they missed this too, right? I was out of gym class for months for a knee injury that I can't even really tell you, you know, exactly what happened. But I know that it was – it's like I have the two stories in my head, like what actually happened and then the story that was fed to me to tell the public, to tell the world. Like what does the note say about why I'm out of gym class? You know, I don't know. Like the two don't go together.
So can you comment on the x-ray you had?
Yeah. So I had an x-ray of my knee to make sure that nothing was broken, even though I don't think I told you this. Jim, our friend who was with us, he skied up to me first and I was like, everything is broken, Jim. I was like, my whole left side broken. Not, but that's how it felt. But I went had an x-ray and there's like old injuries, like they, you know, I got to look at the x-ray report and it's like a old fracture, and then there's like an old, I don't even
syndrome
remember. Yeah,
basically like a syndrome that is the result, typically it says, of like repeated jumping.
Yeah,
but you weren't doing repeated jumping activity.
No. So just seeing things like that are like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It's hard to see, I guess. But it's also hard to think about all the people in my world back then who were just like, oh, you're so dramatic. Oh my goodness, you're always so hurt. You're always, and it's like, what is that? Like, it's hard. I get angry, honestly, thinking about it, because who says that to a kid? Like, who makes them feel that way when they've been injured? It just doesn't compute for me. But I also, that is how I feel, is like, they should feel that way. And I'm sorry that I got hurt. Explain it, Lori. Make it make sense.
It make sense. Well, it makes sense when from the time that, even before you could talk or when you could early talk, that is the line that was fed to you, is you're just dramatic, you're sensitive, you're a problem, your sole purpose should be to be fine so that everything we want to do just keeps going. And everybody around you, unfortunately, either intentionally or unintentionally, were feeding that narrative.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they were. And again, this week has been a really tough week, because in doing this podcast, we've also learned a lot of things and had people, you know, fill in some blanks for, not blanks, but just fill in information for us. And
what was going on outside of Kate's awareness at the time.
And I just, man, it really is, it's hitting me hard today, because it's just a lot. There's a lot. And but I also think it's important, you know, again, a lot of what we're doing here is to raise awareness and to just say, like, you know, how did people miss some of these injuries? And to that point, I guess I want to say that the people who were doing this to me were really good at feeding that narrative, and not just to me, but to everybody else too. They were constantly running interference. You know, at one point we were kind of looking for old medical records, and I don't know how many releases I had to sign, because there was how many different – I mean, we went to multiple different pediatricians when I was a kid. We went to, you know, multiple different hospitals. Every time I got injured, we would go to a different hospital. Like, typically I think people have like kind of a hospital that they use, and it, you know, I've been everywhere. Like, if we got reports from – you know, I mean, this is in the past, like from when I was a kid, that we got reports from Kenmore Mercy, from Mount St. Mary's, from DeGraff. I mean, just everywhere. So I think that, you know, kind of highlights how this was able to be a thing and nobody knew.
That's how it stayed hidden.
Yeah.
It's part of how it stayed hidden.
Yeah.
Because of that.
Yeah. Which, you know, I feel strongly about healthcare workers being aware. I work in the healthcare field and used to run a clinic for a long time. And I was conscious of that. I mean, we actually had in the clinic a woman come in who was in a trafficking situation. And she, I don't even think I ever told you this.
I don't think so.
And she was, it was labor trafficking. And she came in, she was really sick. She didn't speak any English and she had an interpreter with her. And the interpreter was doing all the talking, like she, because there was a language barrier. And I don't know, something just about the whole situation just set me off. Like, it just was like, this isn't right. And fortunately, one of our social workers spoke Spanish and I went and got him and was like, can you talk to her like alone? Like, can you try to? And sure enough, it was like she told him that she didn't want this woman interpreting for her, that she had moved here from New York City for a job, but now they've taken away her cell phone, like what you would imagine wow. trafficking to look like, right? And they left, and this social worker ended up like reaching out to the National Trafficking Hotline and getting her help. Like she was texting with him, and she ended up getting help and moving back to New York City with her family. And so yeah. So, I mean, like, I think it's important for healthcare places to know about that, you know, like I know about it because of my experience.
Because that was your experience.
Yeah.
That people wouldn't let you talk for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. But it does happen, I guess, is kind of my point in healthcare. And I was really thankful. My boss at the time, you know, when we shared this with her, was like, okay, we need to have a trafficking, you know, training. We need to have someone from the International Institute come in and do a training for us because this is craziness. Like we need to know about this. But I don't think that happens everywhere.
Well, and if you hadn't been there, that would have gone by unnoticed.
Yeah.
And not because people didn't care, because you were working in a clinic where people did mm-hmm. genuinely care.
Absolutely.
But they just didn't know.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. No, for sure.
So it's both. We have to care enough to listen to more than just the words. And we have to know the information to pick up on things like, is this person doing all the talking?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's right. Part of it is for a child though, like when I think about my own kids, I do all the talking for them because, you know, they don't know necessarily what to say. But if the question is asked of them, I will let them answer because I have nothing to hide. I'm not, you know.
So I don't know. Have you listened to the recording about how do we keep our kids safe yet? Because I literally say that.
No. I'm not going to answer that because
you're not even listening to our own podcast.
It's been a really long week.
Oh, I'm not surprised because it's not even published yet.
Okay.
I just was like struck by the fact that that's one of the things that I say about how do we help keep kids safe. We give them the opportunity to practice using their voice by not answering everything for them.
Yeah.
And right. You do that.
Yeah. I do that.
You do that. Good job. Instinctively.
Yeah.
You give them voice.
Yeah.
I know. So, and I guess I'm just also thinking about, so the whole emotional reality of it's already hard and now I'm in pain and I already feel bad all the time for all of this, for everything. So if I'm Kate, and now I have one more thing that I'm struggling with and feeling bad about and worrying about.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, by the way, I don't want to be a whiner.
Yeah.
Like that's a big deal for you.
Yeah. Well, because the narrative was that I am dramatic and I want attention and all the things. And so even doing this episode and telling people this is like, this is not comfortable for me because I want to make a joke of it, right? Like that's my, I know everyone is surprised by that.
So shocked.
But I mean, I do. That's my coping mechanism. I mean, I'm literally sitting on this gurney in the ski patrol lodge, like telling the guy, like, I'm going to ski tomorrow, right? And like, obviously, I know I'm not, but like, I'm making a joke because that's the only way to, you know, because I don't want to be dramatic. I don't, you know, I don't want it to be like I'm in so much pain, even when I am, because that I just have been labeled dramatic and have been labeled whiny and needing attention for my entire goddamn life. And I just, you know, I don't want to anymore. But that makes asking for help really hard. So.
Which hopefully gives some perspective on just how hard it is for Kate to even be doing this podcast, because putting all this out there is contrary to everything that she has ever been taught is okay, including don't whine. So never mind don't tell, like keep the secret, but certainly also don't whine, because not only the adults doing this to her would be bothered by the fact that she was telling, but a lot of other people around her who had been given the message of this is just her, she's whiny and sensitive and demanding and needy, now they're coming back at her. So very hard.
I think the other thing, and I feel like we kind of keep skipping around to different things in this episode, it's not as maybe coherent as our other ones, but
okay.
You know, I think so a fair amount of people have reached out to us who are in a position where they work with younger kids, teenagers, teachers and youth leaders and people who are still in a position of working with kids, and have said to us, like, listen, I would never have thought this before I heard your podcast. So, you know, thank you for sharing that. And that's, I can't even tell you how much it means to me to hear those things, because that's the goal, right? Is to make someone else's path a little bit easier. And these are the adults in the world who can do that. They have the ability to do that for somebody. But I think that that's important, because as a kid, I always felt like I'm not a normal kid. I cannot, you know, run the mile in gym because my joints literally hurt and I can't do certain things. And I, instead of being looked at as like, okay, what's going on? You know, what's physically happening in your world, or what's causing your joints as a 10-year-old to hurt, you know? Again, did I have the word joint in my vocab? Probably not.
Did we ever talk about the eye thing?
No.
Here?
What eye thing?
Remember where you like needed glasses?
Yeah. We will talk about that in a sec. But yeah, instead of asking like what's going on, like why can you not run the mile? Why is that such a hard thing for you? It was just like, you're being so dramatic and you're being difficult. That was the other thing. You're being difficult. You just don't want to. And so you're just not gonna. And so, you know, I was in trouble sometimes, honestly, like at school, I would get in trouble for not wanting to participate in things. I mean, that's the whole thing we talked about at that retreat, right? I couldn't go sledding and stuff because I was literally injured from, you know, something that had happened. And yet I was in trouble.
Yeah. Getting on you.
People were mad that I didn't want to do that. Again, not because I didn't want to. I would love to have been a normal kid, but I wasn't because of these things that were happening. The eye thing. Yeah. I got to say this carefully.
Oh, right.
So when I was like in second grade, a friend of mine had gotten glasses, and in the same kind of time frame, I couldn't see the board. I wasn't able to see what was going on in school. And I was taken for an eye exam because the nurse actually had reached out and said, you know, that I needed to be taken for an eye exam. But the people around me who took me, they told the eye doctor that they thought I was lying, that I didn't really need glasses, but that I wanted them because my friend had just gotten them. And somehow that was like super cool, even though, I don't know, is that a thing that kids do?
Sometimes, but
yeah.
I mean, yeah, no, not really. Yeah.
So so the eye doctor then, so this is where I feel like it's like, you got to be kidding me. So the eye doctor took that information, and instead of being like, understood, but like, let's just see what's going on, which should have been the response, tricked me, like actually tricked me, and said that I was lying and whatever. And I was in trouble, the whole thing. I lied. Oh my goodness. Such a big deal. I lied. I wasn't lying. A few months later, the nurse reached out again and said, I don't know what's going on. I'm doing the test, whatever. So they took me to a different eye doctor, and he was like, she's blind as a bat. can't see the big E if we change the letter. So, but like months went by before that was recognized, right? And again, it's like in healthcare, like what on earth? Like if someone is telling you this, like take it with a grain of salt, but like you still do your job, right? Like what in the world? What was that, right? So like a fault on so many levels there and that. But yeah, I went months without being able to see. And I am blind as a bat. Like my contact lens prescription is like -8.5 or something ridiculous like that. So yeah, so it's just there's been a lot of that kind of stuff though. That's just like again the narrative being kind of shoved out there was different than it was a cover up. It was just covering up all the things that were going on. It was, you know, nobody could see through it because it was just like, yeah.
So I feel like we've been very careful up until now to a little bit pull the punch. Like we're not trying to guilt anybody. We're not trying to, you know, there are people listening who honestly were some of those people in your life back then.
Yep.
We've been really careful to highlight. We're not trying to like place blame really. So today is a little bit more of sort of the raw edge of that. So for anybody who's listening, who maybe hears this as a little bit more, I don't know, sharp tongued, maybe just please filter it through the reality of this is not the whole story. We know that there's more to it. We know that, you know, there were people who it was being manipulated. The whole message was all of that. We know that. But what we're talking about right here is what that meant for Kate. Mm-hmm. And that as a kid, there were these indicators that something was not quite right. And a lot of them. And yet she was still stuck in it because somehow people were too willing to believe that this kid was just being dramatic for the sake of being dramatic, which makes no sense. If a kid is getting healthy, positive attention, they don't do these backdoor things to get attention. Mm-mm. They don't. So we have to stop being willing to believe that a child is just trying to get attention. It's not how that works.
Right. Yeah, I feel like that's an important thing to say. So, yeah. It's been a week.
It's been a week.
It's been a couple weeks, to be honest. But, yeah. You know, we have someone that after our segment, we'll talk about
trauma and pain and how the physiologic reality of how trauma affects the pain cycle. So apart from the post-traumatic stress psychological thing, there is also a very real physiologic reality of trauma and the pain cycle. So we are going to talk a little bit about the science of that too. So thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.
We'll be back maybe with a little bit more of our amusing self next time, but not today.
We're so amusing.
We are, but not today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's all right.
It is all right. It's real. If you or someone you know is stuck in a trafficking situation and needs help, please reach out to the National Human Trafficking Hotline by calling 1-888-373-7888 or text HELP, H-E-L-P, to 233-733.